Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Howdy, hour number two, Tiki and Tierney, coming in from the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is more than a house. It's a personal paradise. Get yours with Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. Let's face it. Every day is not the same. Every segment is not the same. We don't have the chance every day to touch a legend. And that's what we're doing here. Well, I'm not going to get too close. I can still swing it, I'm sure. This is phenomenal. I've never met George Foreman. I've never interviewed George Foreman. And George Foreman, of course, is in studio. Two-time heavyweight champ, 1968 Olympic hero, gold medal. And really, and I don't say this, you know, like stretching the boundaries, you are a social icon. I mean, in terms of a pitch man. First of all, it's great to have you here, champ. How you doing today, buddy?
Doing great. I'm happy to be with you.
You look good, man.
I feel good. Yeah. One guy told me I didn't look good and then ended up in a fight.
Yeah.
I appreciate
it. Still, even at 70 years old.
There's an argument about this. You know?
Look, BT mentioned the 1968 Olympics, and, you know, that was an historic Olympics. And I loved the Olympics. I love track and field.
Oh, he's a track and field nerd.
And
he
so
loves it.
Bob Beamon at that Olympics. That was the John Carlos and Tommy Smith Olympics as well. But you were just telling us a story that Bob Beamon was the first one of you all to win a gold medal.
Yeah, he broke a world record. Couldn't touch that, and he came walking through the dining room with a gold medal. And then for the first time, we saw what it was all about. And we followed him like the Pied Piper. He was the wow,
I want one of those.
And I was fortunate enough to get one.
Yeah, when you think back to that Olympics, did you in real time realize that the social change that was trying to happen back then?
You don't realize those things. I think some of the other guys had met together. Harry Edwards, mm-hmm. of course, down at UC.
Yep.
Professor and Dr. Harry Edwards. Mm-hmm. And he had organized, tried to boycott. But some of the guys said, we're not going to do that. We're going to do something else. And they all did some kind of demonstration because of him.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting because that was the critical moment in sports for African-Americans
in this country.
In a lot, of different ways. And you were a big part of it because you won a gold medal that year.
Yeah, that's right. And it was exciting but we didn't understand the news back home. Mm. I remember one day we were all excited. John Carlos was the most hip guy in the Olympics. He smiled. Everybody loved him.
So he was doing all right in the village.
he was doing okay in the village,
what you say there, George.
Yeah, he was the guy on fire there. But one day you saw this smiling face turn angry, and a lot of people following him around media, and he turned around and said something. I could see it out of the dumb room. He was angry, and I didn't realize until later they had dismissed him from the Olympic Village.
Yeah.
All those years you wait, work to get there.
Yeah.
They were telling him to go home.
Yeah.
And he was angry and upset. I'll never forget the look on his face. Never. I wanted to quit myself. A lot of us wanted to just go home.
Interesting.
Because of the look on his face.
But you stayed around. Wow. You stayed around. And
yeah, he didn't advocate that. Yeah. You know, he was a team player.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he was there that night when I won my gold medal later on in Mexico City.
He was there.
He's strictly a team player, but he meant business with his demonstration.
For sure. There's no doubt about that. Champ, how does it start? I mean, everybody's path is different. We know Tyson, you know, just didn't have much direction as a kid, and he was taken in, and obviously, you know, you throw the hands at that rate with that force, you got a future. Every boxer comes up a little differently. How did you know that you had the special? It's not like basketball or baseball. How do you know that, man, this is something I can monetize, and this is something I can be great at?
I really wanted to be a football player. I was in school.
You look like a bigger Tiki.
You know, I was on the defensive tackler, 76 my number. That's all I wanted to be.
Okay.
But I tried out for boxing in the Job Corps, and then I went out for the football team, and a boxing coach saw me out on the line with my fingers. He said, no, don't put your fingers out of there. He said, you're going to be a boxer. He didn't want me to ever play football again, and Doc Broders insisted that I try boxing. And I tried it, but some skinny guy I couldn't hit. I wanted to quit, but he stayed on me. That's what happened. in a Job Corps program. I had
high
school dropouts to get a chance to get an education again and a vocational skill. But I didn't want to really be a boxer.
Some guy said,
George, if you win a gold medal, you could really make a lot of money. I still didn't want to be a boxer.
You want to sell grills instead. we'll get to that. George Foreman, of course, two-time world heavyweight champ, Olympic hero, 68, and the Foreman Grills, just one of the iconic pitchmen and really one of the good guys in our society. You just come across as incredibly pleasant. It's an honor to have you here. You know, and it's funny, a couple of scraps in the schoolyard, lost more than I won back then. I lost more than I won. But, like, you hear natural athlete, like, you know, natural quick twitch. You could run, even, like, natural catching of the ball, or is there such a thing as a natural puncher? Because the mechanics of punching are so different than what somebody like me, who doesn't really know how to fight, would do. Were you a natural puncher?
You know what happened was I started off as a baseball player.
Oh, now we're talking about language.
In Little League, and I could catch that ball. I could do all these great things, but I was always afraid that pitcher was going to hit me. I couldn't stand it. I dodged. And so when I got in the ring, it was like a pitcher is coming after me. I would get so scared and ball my fists up tight, look up, and the guy would be on the floor. I had no technique, but I had something to defend me from that baseball pitcher's hitting me with that ball.
Yeah, it's called fear.
It happened like that. It was fear.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the one time I didn't have fear, I fought Muhammad Ali in Africa. I said, this is the easiest thing going to happen to me. I went in the ring without my fear of the baseball pitcher.
Yeah.
And there I am on the canvas. One, two, three.
Well, George,
had to have fear.
Why? Yeah. What made you so
confident? Muhammad Ali, man.
What made you so confident, though?
Ken Norton had beaten him up.
Oh, I see.
Jaw broke, and I knocked him out. Joe Frazier had knocked him out, turned and flipped. I knocked him out. I said, I'm just going to be kind to this guy. No butterflies. I said, I love this.
Yeah.
Got in the ring and lost.
Yeah.
I always manufactured fear from that point on.
I tell you, it's interesting you say that, because as soon as you're not scared, I remember this, like, playing football. When you walk out and you don't feel, like, nervous, then something's off.
Yeah,
I can see that.
You know it.
I can totally feel something. You should be nervous.
Yeah.
You
always should have that, because especially with boxing, it's the art of self-defense.
Yes.
And you got to be able to be a little frightened to defend yourself. But once you lose that, you're just going out there waiting for someone to get you.
Yeah,
squasher.
That's right. Yeah. You know, George, what was the key to your longevity? Because obviously the early championship we know about, but you were the oldest heavyweight to regain a championship. I mean, it was a long period of time that you boxed. How do you maintain that over so many years?
You know, and I was watching with one of my kids the other day, and I was, look, all the years I was in boxing, I never backed away from anyone. And a lot of times you see fighters back against the ropes, and they never for me. If they got me, it was like in the middle of the ring, crack me. But I never did. Most of the time I was in the ring, everyone spent running from me.
Yeah.
They didn't have to. I felt like running from them, but it never happened. And then my wife, on the second time around, would drop me off, say, 17 miles from home. You have to get back the best way you can. And I loved that lady so much. I said, I got to hurry back and get back.
I got me in shape.
17 miles running.
Wow.
I was going to be the best conditioned athlete alive at that time, and I did it. She didn't like that I did.
Miles.
I came back so quick.
I was going to say,
you're back already?
Really?
He's back.
Jeez, guys. Quicker than next week, it's 25 miles. We'll get another hour here by myself. George Foreman's with us in studio. So obviously we're bouncing around, but there's so many things I want to run by you, and Tiki, of course, as well. Favorite boxing movie? Were you a fan of Raging Bull? Are you a Rocky guy, by extension a Creed guy? What's the most authentic? What's your favorite boxing movie?
Well, the old movie, Humphrey Bogart, The Harder They Fall.
I don't know that one.
I love that movie. It was the movie most about boxing. It was all about boxing.
Okay.
You can campaign and do everything and get to be a great contender, even get a title shot. But the one time you've got to fight is when you get matched with the champion. They're not going down. They'll fight you down to the ground. Every contender has got to realize that one day in your life you're going to have a fight.
Yeah.
And that was a fact. Joe Frazier, I wanted that title.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali, he wanted it back. You're going to have to fight. And that, I wasn't. If you're not prepared to fight, Yeah, and The Harder They Fall, that movie was about that campaign, but the title, you're going to have to fight for it.
George, the first title that you won, how did you celebrate that night? Do you remember what you did that night?
The one thing I hadn't had was all the water I wanted. And I had these bottles of water. And it was too late to order cheeseburgers, so I just ordered any kind of burger.
I would have been at the club, man. If I was a heavyweight champ, that's where I would have been going. But you didn't party much at all, right?
Not at all. No? I was a teenager, and I think I learned earlier, they don't want you at the party if you're going to – someone spiked the punch. Mm-hmm. I'd always end up fighting, and they'd kick me out, and the party would close down. This is like some athlete, you know. It's like, don't let him back in. He's going to end the party. No more kissing and dancing. But when I stopped that area, I never celebrated. Never even won the title twice. Never had 1 ounce of champagne.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Never.
Well, you know what they say to George. This is why bars and clubs don't hire boxers as bouncers. They hire wrestlers. Because you hire a boxer, somebody's getting knocked out. If something happens. You hire a wrestler, you just get them on the ground.
They'll
tap out. George, you spent a lot of time getting beat up. Literally, figuratively, beat up. And real-time pain relief has a George Foreman's formula now, knockout formula. Tell us about this for temporary pain relief.
And
it's
for
interesting.
The first time I see something that works, it actually worked. I've had old injuries, and I thought, it's not going to help this. Put it on after a couple of times. I wake up the next day, leg, hips, anything, I'm feeling better.
Yeah.
And the good thing about it, I have 14 grandkids, three great-grandkids. And they love to play with me. And I've been in a position where they came in and they smell other stuff and say, oh, Grandpa, hi, bye. Your room smells like granddaddy.
Oh.
But now this stuff, you put it on, they don't even know it. And they come and wrestle with you and play with you, and they don't even feel like you some old grandpa. It doesn't smell.
Just the joy in this man's eyes. It is so authentic. You love life.
Yeah, life
that is so abundantly clear.
That's been so good. The greatest thing that ever happened to me, I told you early on, I went into the Job Corps program.
Yep.
They gave me 3 meals in 1 day. I kept thinking, I better take some of this home.
That's a good day.
After about 3 months, I realized it's going to be something here the next day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I ate. And since then, I've been able to champ of the world, go out and buy a Jack in the Box and all of that stuff. I'm happy.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
The state of the sport now, where do you see boxing, particularly the heavyweight division?
Deontay Wilder.
Deontay Wilder.
Oh, he's boxing
now. Yeah.
And then there was an Andy Ruiz.
Yeah.
Oh, did he surprise Anthony Joshua?
Yeah.
Knocked him out. I mean, dropped him.
He did.
But it's great for boxing.
We're talking heavyweights for a change.
Yeah.
I love it. I think boxing is in a great state.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've talked heavyweight. Yeah. It's one thing.
Need characters. Yeah. We need.
That's a good point.
We need to gravitate to something more than a boxer's skill set. We need a person like Tyson was
personality.
Crazy.
Yeah,
Evander Holyfield was the polished pro.
Yeah,
you know whether or not you respected or loved Lennox Lewis, he had a certain vibe. We need to be able to
want
to touch these boxers. That's what makes you pay the money to watch the fight.
Yeah,
more so than just the fight. You know what I wanted to ask you? If you were coming up now, do you think you'd be tempted to maybe become an MMA fighter rather than
a boxer? Been on a scene when I was. In boxing, period, I would have dabbled into it easily.
Really?
Yeah, because can you imagine someone pulling the rope-a-dope on me and I can kick you off of there?
Bare knuckle, by the way,
knuckle. That's the way I enjoy fighting.
Yeah.
Wow.
I really love fighting. The first time I tried to box, they put me in the ring and the guy kept jabbing me. And I couldn't hit him, so I grabbed him. I tried to pick him up. They said, no, put him down. MMA was what I should have been.
So you were doing like Thunder Lips in Rocky III, basically. You were picking up Stallone and you were trying to
have
wrestling and box.
They put people down, but I wanted to do it. I mean, so MMA is the great way to go. I wish it had been there all along.
I don't want this man to leave.
Yeah, I know. We can all define your greatest matches, but we're sitting on the outside looking in. When you think about like your best moment in a ring, what was it?
Oh, before the ESPN and all of the film that you see on television, there was a time when I campaigned everybody said, he's got money behind him. He's just an Olympic gold medal. You beat him, and they'd make these matches with me all around the country. And guys would think they could beat me, and I'd knock them out. So one guy was like, he was. They couldn't hold him back. I said, what's wrong with him? I'm going to show him something. He came out, and I missed him by a foot, and he felt the wind and held on to me. He said, they lied. Then I missed him by like 6 inches. He really tried to break my back. They pulled us apart, and I missed him by an inch, and he hit the floor. I said, man, get up. The crowd saw I didn't hit you. He fainted then. And later on,
like
I was so,
move.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I missed him. I didn't. Everybody knew I didn't hit this guy. So later on that night, I was disappointed and sad, and he walked up to me. He said, you really wanted me to get up, didn't you? I said, yes. He said, you wanted to kill me. I said, yes. He said, that's why I didn't get up. And for the first time, I understood boxing.
Yeah, that is
all
great.
The time, you know, you better bail out sometimes.
That's wow.
Because so what are you going to get?
That's great.
George Foreman is with us. Unfortunately, we have to start wrapping it up. The champ, two-time champ, Olympic hero,
well,
1968.
Find that real-time pain relief.
Yeah.
Foreman, the knockout formula, and, you know, you go to a Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it delivered to your house.
The next day?
And you won't smell like a grandpappy.
Like old Spice Bengay. Hey, champ, it is an absolute honor. I got to shake that heavy mitt of yours. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
It's an honor.
The absolute great, the friendly, the happy, the wonderful. This was phenomenal. And I know our audience enjoyed this. Thank you very much, champ. The great George Foreman. A little late,
thank you,
quick time out. We'll come back. We got to get to Memphis' situation. What'd I tell you?
Yeah.
What did I tell you?
You were right.
This was so easy to call.
James Wiseman.
We'll get to it. Take a seat, young man. We'll get to that coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Okay, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227. That's 1-855-212-4CBS, brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way to save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. That was special. Hopefully you guys really enjoyed that George Foreman conversation. The champ is here. George Foreman was absolutely phenomenal.
Dude, and he's the man.
I didn't.
Like, you said something in the break.
I know what you're going to say.
Which is, it's so true. Like, he's a great champion. Maybe not the greatest champion. Because
there's been
some epic, in-ring champions. But he's a champion. But he is. The greatest pitch man that you can
his mainstream crossover appeal is without peer.
Because
we were just
talking about the George Foreman grill. He wasn't even here to sell the George Foreman grill.
No, we just got to throw it out there.
I was like, how old is he? Yeah. Because I feel like I had that grill when I was in college, but he must have been selling the grill before he finished boxing, and he did.
He was. Oh,
1994.
Yeah, well, that's the first year?
When he first, the George Foreman grill came out, and then he won the title. What was it, a year later, 2 years later, whatever it was. So there's some people that know him as the oldest champion ever. There's some people that know him as this Olympic, you know, gold medalist from the 1968 Mexico City Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
There's some that only know him as the George Foreman Grill pitch person.
That's right.
And it's been 26 years.
I know.
It's insane,
man. Hey, listen,
man.
If you lived,
one in college. Absolutely, I did.
If you lived in Manhattan, and I lived in Manhattan for 8 years on the Upper West Side before I got engaged and eventually married, you had to have one of those things if you wanted to have a hamburger.
That's right.
I mean, and the thing that was so amazing about it.
Yeah, because you can't have a grill.
You can't grill. I didn't have a deck at that. It was just a
even if you did, you're not
shack.
Allowed to. You're not allowed to put grills. You can put the electric ones.
That's true,
you can't
the electric ones. There's no flames. You can't do that. But these grills, they were devised in a way where the oil would drip right out to a perfect spot. They had a little indentation. You had the little thing you stuck under it. It was money.
I remember
the George Foreman grill.
I remember. There's a friend of mine. His name's AJ Cabani. He does like As Seen on TV stuff.
Oh yeah,
and he was telling me like the story behind the.
They
George
got some
Foreman
crazy
grill.
Stuff on. Some of those things are actually
it's insane,
almost enticing enough to buy.
Exactly right.
I mean, I'm like,
but
yeah,
the
I'm
George Foreman
that.
Grill was it was like a failed product.
Is that true?
It wasn't working, and then they stuck the. It was a good product.
Just wasn't getting traction on the.
And then George Foreman came into the mix, mm-hmm. and it's the greatest selling.
Oh, so it was failing before it had his name attached to it.
Yes.
They threw George Foreman on it and it took off.
Because he is the greatest pitchman ever.
He's got cookbooks. The guy, and listen, I said this, and, you know, I don't think I've ever really said this, so you never know how it's going to come out, even though it's coming from a good place for sure. The guy just emits, like, happiness.
Yeah.
He just projects such
goodness and until you get mad, like wholesomeness, like zest for life. He was that. That truly was a gift. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed that. All right. Hopefully, you enjoyed watching James Wiseman play at Memphis as well, because we might not be seeing him again. Listen, this I got to be. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but this was the absolute easiest thing for me to read. When this story came up, yeah, you could give Memphis credit for trying to, you know, be the one that takes on the NCAA, the Cavalier rogue school who's going to color outside the lines. It's the dopiest thing they ever did. They had no chance to win. Now James Wiseman has withdrawn the lawsuit against the NCAA.
Yep.
He's going to have to sit in hopes of having the eligibility restored. So you tell me, who truly won? Who won? What did Memphis accomplish except getting extra games tacked on to his suspension?
Well, I mean,
which is what's going to happen.
Agreed. Now,
because now you pissed off the NCAA.
I'll tell you who potentially could win.
Okay.
Potentially, Penny could win. Because if he sustains, who knows what this
is. I'm listening.
Who knows
what this is. I think I know where you're going. This could be
interesting.
The suspension
could be, I mean, what, 15 games, 20? Who knows? Whatever it is.
Depends on the amount. There's always, that's important. The amount. Well, we know the amount, but depending upon, yeah, 15 seems ambitious, maybe a little inside of that.
Yep. So whatever it is, if Penny maintains Memphis through this little stretch, whatever, however long many games it is that James Wiseman is not available, and again, this is important because James Wiseman is a monster, likely being number one overall pick
Beast.
In this upcoming draft. He's 7'1". Mm-hmm. He's athletic as hell. He's a great defender.
Yep.
And he can score. So he's a beast.
He's going first.
Exactly. If Penny maintains Memphis through this little downturn, maybe there's a couple, you know, off nights and they lose a couple games here. And then he comes back, and they run the table, and he's, you know, juiced up and excited, and, you know, it's us against the world. You know, NCAA is coming down on us. People counted us out. People said, you know, Penny was a cheat and all these other things. Penny could really win here. Penny and Memphis could really win.
Meaning other players will say, okay, the program's winning, and I know that cat's got my back.
Exactly.
I thought that's where we were going to go, and that's an outstanding point.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't ruin Memphis, and I don't think it will. I don't think it will.
Don't you think it's too early in his tenure for it to ruin? You know, in the traditional term of ruin an organ. I know what you're saying, but
only because, like, if the NCAA stripped away a postseason or a reduction in scholarships, which they won't, nor should they, but you never know how heavy-handed they could be.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like there's, in unison, that everybody is trying to move past this. Everybody knows we're in a different space now where, finally, the NCAA recognizes they've got to treat the student-athlete better, and it seems like they're working toward that solution, but they still have to adhere to the rules.
But didn't we get a little bit of information to the point you're making? Like, the NCAA is smart. They're not going to, like, throw the Thor hammer down on these guys. It's with the Chase Young situation at Ohio State.
That's fair.
Like, who knows what that could have been?
Yep.
I mean, he took a loan, didn't pay any interest on it from a friend that he met two years ago.
To fly his girlfriend out to the bowl game.
Exactly. And so it was an impermissible benefit. Ohio State did the right thing by suspending him for a game. The NCAA said, okay, I get it. It could have, you know, wiped out all the games that they had won prior, right? They could have wiped out Ohio State's record right now because he was technically ineligible for taking.
Could they still do that?
I don't.
Can't they retroactively do anything
maybe,
they
but
want?
But it doesn't.
I don't think they will.
It doesn't feel like they are. It feels like the NCAA, which then said, okay, great, we got it. You'll be suspended for one more game. That's the Rutgers game. So he misses Maryland and Rutgers. Great. Back for Penn State.
Yep.
But the NCAA penalized in a sense, but then moved it on. Like, compartmentalized it, moved them
forward.
Seems
like they're learning a lesson.
Exactly.
To hold
the
grudge, to be heavy handed. Nobody cares. Nobody respects that.
It's just going
to
bring the wrath back on them.
Yeah.
Make people
an awakening and awareness.
Yeah. Make people say, dude, you guys are making $1 billion.
Maybe.
Why are you crushing kids in programs?
Maybe. Right? Quite possibly, yes. I think that's a very distinct possibility. And by the way, I'm on one of the pages now. Last year, all right, the 2019 recruiting, like the compilation encompassing all the kids that went, not just the one kid, but like their whole commitment class. Georgia was number 10, hoops. Georgia number 10, North Carolina number 8, Gators 8, North Carolina 9, Gators 8, USC 7, Wildcats of Arizona 6, Villanova 5, Oregon 4, Duke 3, Kentucky 2, and Memphis won.
Wow.
Because you remember when they got Wiseman, they jumped over Duke for that over Kentucky for the first spot.
That's right.
They were in that 2-3 range. They have – that to your point, it's not just like there's Wiseman and like four walk-ons,
mm-hmm.
and you were hoping, well, maybe we can have one great season. They brought in seven kids, Teague, five of whom are four stars, two of which are five stars, Wiseman being one of the five stars. So the way that they assign a point total here, their point total – was their average rating was 97.61, and they accrued more points than anybody, including Kentucky and Duke.
Wow.
It's not a one-man show. Now that this doesn't – I don't think this will destroy their season. I think what you said about Penny is very important because there's got to be kids now saying, hell yeah. I know that if something goes awry, that I know Memphis and, by extension, my coach is going to leave me out to dry.
That's right.
And that is potent and that is powerful stuff.
That's right.
Okay. But again, so it's coming a mile away. This was easy stuff to read. I mean, come on. You know, you knew that this was, was it just going to go away?
No.
We're going to play him and we're going to ignore you. Well, you're going to have to come to resolution, and they have. All right, inbounds, out of bounds coming up next. Santer, what is on the inbounds, out of bounds menu? Let's see if Santer mailed it in today or if he actually did something good. First up, a little something on Cam. Ooh, a little something on John Morant. Mm. He is balling. John Morant is money. A little something on the Rockets, big win last night. All right, this looks worthy. A little something on Scott Boras as well and his clientele. So we'll get inbounds, out of bounds, Anthrax update, which is right now. Here's Rich. All righty, Tiki and Tierney here. Time for a little inbounds, out of bounds. First up, let me tell you, Sunday, an NFL on CBS doubleheader, and it's going to be good, featuring a battle between two of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the sport. When Lamar Jackson and the Ravens welcome Deshaun Watson and the Texans, both teams certainly in the top three or four for the MVP, a little Russell Wilson as well, a little C-Mac, maybe Rodgers on the outer layers there. Followed by the Pats as they get ready for another tough road test, taking on Philly. That's in Philly, obviously. All starts with JB and the guys on the NFL today. Coach Cower, Booms, little Nate Dogg, our buddy Phil Sims. Yeah, they're all our buddies. It all starts the NFL today at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, only on CBS. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. A lot of great responses from the George Foreman spot. Listen, if your dad, your uncle, your older brother, somebody who watched Foreman or somebody who's younger and you want to educate them on George Foreman, you got to get this podcast.
Yeah.
Easy to do it. Just go to Tiki and Tierney or radio.com or Apple iTunes, CBSSportsRadio.com. Download for free. Set yourself up. Never be without Tiki and Tierney. He was phenomenal. That really was a really good, fun interview. All right, Teak, inbounds, out of bounds. You ready?
Let's go.
Here we go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
Cam Newton's career could be over in Carolina. I told you this over the summer. And now the talk shifts to where we did.
The former MVP.
Where the former MVP might fit next season and moving forward. Where would Cam fit? Is he healthy? Does he want to go somewhere else? Well, now we're starting to get a little sense that he might. He's got 1 year to go on the deal. And while he doesn't have a no trade, most believe that the Panthers trade him. They would choose a team he wants to play for. So they would try to do right by Cam so he could sign an extension. Now, reports say Cam would prefer to play for the Bears if he's not in Carolina, something Lock and Four has been reporting for a while. In or out, a trade to Chicago would be a good fit for both Cam and the Bears.
I think it would be good for the Bears. I don't know if it would be good for Cam. Like, they don't have a Christian McCaffrey. I'm going to say out of bounds here. They don't have a Christian McCaffrey who's a blanket, just an ease blanket for Cam Newton. You get in trouble, chunk it down. To C-Mac. Their wide receiving core isn't spectacular either. It's Allen Robinson and Tyler Gabriel and Anthony Miller, Cordero Patterson, like, who's more of a returner.
There's not
that ton of, like, the skill isn't there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been developed a little bit in Carolina. And if you're asking Cam to come in and lift, you know, lift the program, so to speak, I don't know if that's where he is right now. Mm. So I'm going to say out of bounds.
Interesting the way you line it up. You know, as you say that, I'm thinking maybe I should change my answer. Tiki's making some sense here because my answer is inbounds. I'll stick with it. I'll say that I just think really any location, unless it was like the most destitute, desperate NFL situation, obviously wouldn't be good.
Yeah.
I just think that he'll be galvanized by wherever he goes. You know, and the fans will appreciate him in Chicago.
For Chicago,
that style.
It's great.
Yeah.
Right? And if you're thinking of it from Trubisky Cam. You're taking Cam every time, right? So from that regard, it's easy to go inbound.
If he's healthy.
I just don't know if it's going to be good for Cam.
For Cam. No, yeah. And that's the way it's framed here. You know, both. So you have to incorporate both aspects here. I'd have to think that, you know, obviously the defense is very good. Can you address one or two needs in free agency and or the draft? And get that little plug-and-play scat back tight end. Yeah, I think you probably could. So I'll say inbounds, and, you know, I could see Cam playing that style in the cold in that division, banging bodies, if he's still physically resilient and willing to do it.
I don't know if he wants to still do it. That's the problem.
But Nobody knows that.
But yet. I think they would use Tariq Cohen much more than they currently are. If they don't have usage rate in the NFL, but if they look at his usage rate, it's so small right now.
Yeah.
He's such a dynamic player. But
why don't they use him?
Because David Montgomery's a good, young... He's a rookie, obviously. We all remember Dave Montgomery from... where did he go? Iowa State.
Understood, but...
But I hear you.
Use them both. I mean,
I agree.
You're not throwing downfield with Trubisky.
Last year, they did.
Yeah.
And this year, it's... I don't know. It's weird.
All right. Are you in or are you out? Ja Morant came into the season as one of the favorites to win the Rookie of the Year. I picked him to win Rookie of the Year on Tiki and Tierney.
I think I did, too.
I mean, it's early. Not a... I think we both had a lot of the same
in the NBA this year.
I thought you picked somebody different. I thought you picked Zion.
I did not pick Zion. Zion's hurt.
Listen, we can stop wondering.
It's going to say Ja Morant.
Yeah, you did pick Ja Morant. I thought I was the only one to pick Ja. I picked Ja Morant, too. All right, so we both picked Ja Morant. Doesn't sound as good saying that. We both picked Ja Morant to win the Rookie of the Year.
I cheated. I looked at your paper.
You did? But an injury to Zion, a strong play early, has him as the clear-cut rookie right now. He's been balling. And they've been winning a little more than we thought here.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to win 50 games, but they're not. I mean, we thought they might be like a 17 or 20-win team. We thought they'd be bad. Now, the former Murray State star, 18 points a game average, 6 assists as well, and he leads all rookies in both categories. Now, last night he dropped 23, including an acrobatic game-winning layup. I'm not sure if we have it here on the two, but it was pretty sweet. With 2 seconds to go, Ja Morant putting the spin, little spin cycle. Where's Ja? This is actually early. Now we're just rolling through the highlights. All good. And we'll probably get to it at the end. That was a steal on the lefty layup. I don't know why I'm doing play-by-play mode all of a sudden. I'm getting excited. Through the legs, looking into the paint. Oh, they spit off the window. Ja Morant for the deuce. All right, so Ja Morant is balling. We all know this. In or out, Morant has already exceeded your expectations during his first 10 games.
That's a good question, Samter, but the answer is out of bounds.
Exactly.
Yeah, mainly because we knew he was this way. We saw him at Murray State basically put the entire team on his back and march into the NCAA tournament and winning because of him and him alone in a lot of cases. That's a fallacy, but you know what I mean.
Is it?
Not really.
No.
But I don't want to disrespect
the other. No, but, I mean, he elevated that program three notches. Let's see where they are without him this year.
Yeah.
They could still be decent. They won't be like they were last year.
And the
shot, by the way.
Yep. The thing is he can score from range.
Yep.
But if you look at what he did against Charlotte in this game, he only knocked down 1 3-pointer.
Mm-hmm.
All his shots were in the paint. So it's high efficiency, athleticism that is seemingly indefensible against some of these teams that he's played so far in his young season. So absolutely not, because we saw the same thing when he was in college.
Yeah, and his court vision is incredible. You know, you wonder sometimes the kids at Murray State couldn't really handle those laser passes in tight proximity. Those things will be squeezed in the NBA.
That's right.
As we're seeing. My answer is out of bounds as well. Just to attack it a little differently. He is shooting the ball from downtown a little bit better than I thought. The percentage is very good. It's 44%, which is incredible. It's great for Steph Curry.
That's right.
But here's what's really impressive. The young man already knows what a good shot is and what a bad shot is, and he doesn't take bad shots.
That's a good point.
He's taken 11 threes, all right? He sat out a couple of games. Remember, he had surgery this summer as well. Mm-hmm. People forget about that. So he's taken less than 2 threes a game. And part of being an incredibly efficient/great player is knowing what a bad shot is.
Yep.
And that's not dissimilar from a young hitter who comes up and hits 315 versus the kid who hits 260. If you know what a ball and a strike is, you don't extend the strike zone and you get a good pitch to hit. You turn things around. He has a very high IQ, and I'm not sure everybody knew that. The kid's a stud.
Yeah, he took one mid-range jumper from the top of the key, and he nailed it.
Of course he did.
One.
He's John Morant.
One mid-range, which is obviously the most inefficient shot.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't take bad shots, BT.
And he's going to put on real good functional weight. He's 6'3", 190. He doesn't have a muscle on him yet.
No.
Wait till he's got 3 years in the weight room and, like, man strength. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a problem for everybody.
I think you're right.
Are you in or are you out?
Try to stick with hoops here. Key early season Western Conference matchup. All right, the Houston Rockets improved improved to 8-3 with, what are you guys laughing at? Lisa, what's so funny?
Sampson's always like 52-30 if you want to get the last
What's
one.
That? And is that what he said? Okay, okay. A little, I thought he was laughing something I said.
So I said 52-30 D's.
There you go. That's why you're laughing. I get it. D's. Yeah. You know what we mean by D's. All right, so anyway, they're 8-3. Who are we talking about? The Rockets are 8-3 with a win over the 7-4 Clippers. So Russell Westbrook, just 17 points. Very
Hater.
Low, you know, low presence on the stat sheet. Just a couple of boards, two dimes. While James Harden
Hater.
Carried the Lizzo'd with 47. After the game, Westbrook threw a little
Hater.
Shade at his old nemesis, Patrick Beverley, and his claim to be an elite defender.
Pat Bev trick y'all, man, like he playing defense. He don't guard nobody, man. He's just running around.
Pat Bev.
Doing nothing, man.
Okay.
As you've seen, what happened, 47. All that commotion to get 47. Tonight, James took advantage of him and got what he wanted.
All right, so that's Russell Westbrook. The only problem is that is factually as incorrect as it gets.
Yeah.
Now, what happened with the shade there, Harden, he may have scored 47 in the game, but he was 0-for-6 with 4 turnovers when he was isolated against Patrick Beverley. So what Westbrook just said is a complete fallacy. He was schooled by Beverly. He had a
yep.
great game. Beverly abused him as he abuses everybody. Inbounds, out of bounds. Beverly is the best on the ball defender in the NBA.
All right, I'm going to say inbounds to this BT, and there's a reason behind it. There are some really good ones. Danny Green is a good one. Kawhi Leonard is obviously a good one. Giannis, big. Gobert mm-hmm. is the defensive player of the year. Embiid, all these guys are great defenders.
Yep. Then there's the great shot blockers like Gobert, et cetera.
Patrick Beverley
yep.
is always tasked with defending the best ball handler on the field, on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And
remember what he did to Lonzo first
exactly.
game?
Exactly. He brutalizes. He annoys. He frustrates. The tactics are annoying as hell. If you're an opponent, you're like, you swat that kid away, smack him down, whatever it is. Do anything because he's annoying. But that's what makes him good. I'm going to yep. say inbounds of this, BT.
I totally agree. He's a little like Gary Payton.
Yeah,
in that sense, where
he's in your grill.
Oh, he talks
right?
the whole
slapping
time.
Slapping the ball all the time, yep. slapping at the ball the whole time.
He's great. My answer is inbounds as well. Listen, the reason why he's the best on the ball defender in the NBA, certainly there's defensive instincts and there's the anticipatory skills that you can't really quantify. You just have to watch the game and know the game. But what I think really makes him the best is that he has the most pride at being the best. He walks out of that mm-hmm. tunnel, and it is his personal mission to derail the absolute best offensive player and embarrass him.
That's right.
And that is a rare commodity in the NBA where a lot of guys coast. Some guys have comparable defensive skill. His pride is beyond reproach. Inbounds, I'm with you.
Are you in or are you out?
Did you get to 52-30?
52-20. Stay up there.
D's. All right, so during last year's free agency debacle, super agent Scott Boras was a vocal critic of the league, and he called for teams, called teams out for colluding to keep salaries down. That was a big storyline. We discussed it. Now Boras says this year's crop appears to be more vibrant, with teams more eager to talk shop. However, despite the increased interest, Boras still called out the lack of competition around the league.
The industry is in a competitive hibernation, and the fans are reacting to it. We've got a decline in attendance. We've got owners charging more for generations that want to see the game. Yet, while we're losing a generation of the young people that only are interested in competition, and we have this hibernation period where I will be good for 2 or 3 years out of 10 and not be good for the other 7 years is something that is economically, with revenue sharing and the system as a reward, we need to have competitive rewards.
Right, hurry up, Scott. Come on, we get the point. So Boras continued by saying the league should mandate and force teams to try to be competitive every year. In or out, the league should do more to force teams to spend money and compete every year.
Out of bounds, BT.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you can make it. Independent enterprise spend money they don't want to spend.
Why not? You can raise the ceiling. You can raise the floor. Floor is the roof. The roof is the floor.
The ceiling is above us.
The ceiling is the roof. Wait, the ceiling is the floor.
No.
He said the ceiling is the floor.
The ceiling
which,
is
by the way,
ceiling is the roof.
Which, by the way, he's actually very right.
No, I think he
if
said
your ceiling is the floor, you're in one good spot, man.
Yeah.
Think about it. If your ceiling is your floor, if the ceiling is the floor, you're tremendous. What did he say?
He said the ceiling.
Oh, the ceiling is
the ceiling is the roof.
Well, then he just
which
drunk.
Is which is literally correct. But
know what he was getting.
Figuratively.
All right, wait, but you say out of bounds, you say inbounds?
I say out of bounds.
Okay, I say.
Look, these guys got burned with these long term contracts, the older vets, so they're not going to do it anymore.
I'm going to say out of bounds, but I would throw this caveat if I was to say inbounds.
Yeah.
I would say over the course of an aggregate 3-year window, you've got to have like a specified salary floor. This way, there's no prolonged hibernations.
Oh, yeah, you go. Well, I just saw you like that. He liked that word, hibernation.
How about these?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.